Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm your host, Ken Molman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. Well, it's been interesting. It's been an interesting week. We'll talk about this week and kind of get a recap of what's been going on. I do have a couple of other news things that I've been putting off long enough, and we need to just have real quick just because they're relevant at the moment. But first, start out with the political rhetoric generator, as always. And this week's political rhetoric generator, or the rhetoric that's come from the political rhetoric generator is, I'm in America where Chilean miners and overseas manufacturers cannot make a mockery of our hardworking teachers. You know, some of them are better than others, but it always entertains me. They always come up with something interesting to say. One of the interesting things going on this week on the web was 50 things you probably didn't know about Kentucky. And it's interesting. First time I saw this, number 10 didn't exist. It's back. Nice of it. But number nine holds a special near and dear place in my heart. Number nine is the Kentucky treasurer, Honest Dick Tate, provided us with a wee bit of historical irony, absconding in 1888 with a cool $250,000 from the state treasury. When I ran for state treasurer in 2011, I told this story often. And so it's nice to see that the story lives on outside of my campaign and outside of really anything to have to do with me. The story does live on. There's no doubt in my mind that if computers had existed at the time, we wouldn't have a state treasurer. At the time, someone had to sign all the checks, and today that's not necessary. Computers print them all away. But unfortunately, this year, we did not get the amendment that I wanted, which was the amendment to remove the treasurer's office from our Constitution and from our government. So the useless office of treasurer lives on to well, next year, I guess, I'll be elected again, and it'll be another $110,000 wasted in salaries for two or three people and a couple of high six-figure salaries wasted on people. And, yeah, you know, whatever. It goes on because we certainly can't fix anything in the state. That would be too hard. One of the other things in talking to some folks here recently and, you know, the smoking ban fight's going to kick up hardcore. They're probably the strongest push they're going to make in, well, ever. They've dumped, some groups dumped $100,000 into the Northern Kentucky Health District's lap. I'm sure there's others. They'll be using that money not to fight heroin, not to improve, you know, direct health issues, but they'll be using that to lobby Frankfurt for a statewide smoking ban. And, boy, I can think of about 100,000 other better uses of $100,000, but that's what they'll be using it for because that's what it was granted to them for. And so rather than actually doing something productive like, you know, heroin treatment or prevention or anything like that, they'll instead be in Frankfurt lobbying. Great. Super. But one of the things that, you know, always is interesting is to look at communities that have had a smoking ban for a while and, you know, what happens next? Because the ban nannies, they don't stop being nannies just because they get a smoking ban. Their whole thing is to make it their business to be in your business. And so in Allentown, Pennsylvania, at a local ballpark, Coca-Cola Park, there is a push on to ban bacon because bacon is bad for you. And, boy, selling bacon at the ballpark, that's glorifying bacon. And that's bad. I mean, you don't want kids to eat bacon. I mean, oh, my gosh. I'm not kidding you. This is not a joke. They are literally using the exact same rhetoric that they use for smoking bans to now try to ban bacon from the public sphere. And make no mistake, that's what this is all about. It's not even about the health or any of that. I mean, you can tie it to that. But their real goal is to denormalize the act of smoking. And that's the reason why they want things like smoking out of the public sphere. They don't want a place where people see people smoking. And likewise, in this scenario, they are trying to ban bacon for the sake of keeping it out of the eyes and minds of children. Because why would we want children to see people consuming such an unhealthy product like bacon? That's the mind of the nanny state, folks, and that's it's important to remember that. Because you can be against smoking. I get it. I really, really do. But the reality is that if you let the market solve this, and it is solving this, in Northern Kentucky, we've seen it solving this, the market does a pretty darn good job of allowing business owners to decide their policies based upon what their consumers demand. And their consumers, more and more, are demanding smoke-free environments. And that's okay. I don't care if business owners decide to go smoke-free. That's great. It's their business. They know their customers. They know their clientele. They know their market segment better than anyone else. This campaign, they've started a campaign to make fun of this whole push to ban bacon. And it's hilarious. There's a billboard where they've stuck pieces of cigarettes. And I find it just hilarious. They're doing a Twitter thing, hashtag save our bacon. And, you know, why can people not leave other people alone is beyond me. I just don't get it. I'm not encouraging people to smoke or consume ridiculous amounts of bacon, but for crying out loud, educate people and let people make informed decisions. And make no mistake, this whole bacon thing, the other part of it is, you know, move the rhetoric about smoking being, oh my gosh, it's an epidemic, even though people have been smoking for 100 years. Now it's an epidemic. They're putting the same rhetoric now onto children and the obesity thing, where they're basically saying, oh my, kids are too fat. We need to make them eat carrots and things they won't eat. And I guess that's one way for them to lose weight is they won't eat that stuff, and so they're not eating. But the nanny state march is on, folks, and we'll be talking a lot more about that as time goes on. One of the interesting things going the legalization of marijuana in Colorado, and just saw a story about the consequences or unintended consequences of legalizing marijuana. What has happened since, you know, now that we're over 3 months into legalization, what are we looking at here? One of the things that's out there is that crime in the city of Denver has slightly declined. Now, that's not saying that it would have otherwise, but it does say that the people who claim that legalizing marijuana would cause a skyrocketing crime problem and, oh, my gosh, there'll be people dying in the streets, we're all wrong. The fear-mongering was all wrong. Sure. And, you know, essentially the law is operating as it was intended. Tax money is through the roof, and they're spending tax money to fund school nurses and public education on marijuana. Colorado cops get a chunk of it to do further DUI enforcement, enjoy the checkpoints. Yay. But the majority of this still, even in a state that has legalized recreational use marijuana, the giant, the bulk of sales is still in the medical marijuana area, which sales topped $35 million in March alone. That's a lot of money. They're predicting that total marijuana sales in Colorado will approach $1 billion by the end of this year. And that's pretty significant. You figure that there's a 50% tax, that's a $500,000 going into the state's coffers to fund various programs. You know, the other thing not factored in, and what's really hard to factor in anyway, is the savings. The savings aren't even being talked about. the not putting people on trial, arresting them, and putting them in jail. Then you get into the even deeper ones of people whose lives haven't been ruined and can live productive lives with a job. The drug cartels and the changes that occurs. Now the cartels aren't bringing the stuff in and selling it on the black market. And, you know, now you don't have people maintaining weed that has other junk in it. And there's all these other secondary and tertiary savings that are really hard to tally. And I guess the point is that it's an example of where when the nanny state backs off, we win. Now, I'm not saying that, and I've said this before, I've never smoked marijuana. I don't have an overriding urge to do so. I'm not for legalization because I want to smoke weed. I look at the money involved, and I'm like, wow, that's kind of ridiculous. I look at it from a freedom aspect. You know what? Forget you. You can't tell me what I can and can't do. I'm an individual. I'll make my own choices. If you want to tell me the pros and cons and legitimately say this is good for this and it's bad for this and whatever, cool. I'm an adult. Let me make my own decisions. And I'm okay with that. But, you know, again, it's not that I want to go out and smoke weed. I don't. I have no urge to do so. I've been around people who have. I think it smells terrible. And I say that as a smoker. You know, I mean, I'm just saying. And so I guess the point is that there are really good reasons not to pursue the nanny state. Beyond the cost to individual liberty, there is the cost to your wallet. There is the cost that the government then has to raise more taxes to enforce laws. Any law that is passed and then enforced requires money to be enforced. The law requires money to be spent so it can be enforced. And so every time we create a new law, spending money. That makes sense to everybody. If we're creating a law, we're spending money. Period. You cannot create a law that doesn't spend money unless you're just creating a law and not enforcing it. And then what's the point of creating the law to begin with? So the problem is in today's society is that we're really too quick to go down that there ought to be a law mindset. Oh, I don't like this. There ought to be a law. No, not necessarily. Just because you don't like something doesn't mean there should be a law. Does need to be laws. Laws do need to exist. People need to honor contracts. You need to honor other people's property and personal rights. But controlling those things costs money. Anyway, I've gotten off on a tangent. I didn't even mean to go here. I really wanted to talk tonight about the election, and I'm going to take your calls here in just a few minutes at 858-833-1326 if you'd like to call in and jump in the queue. We'll be taking calls here in a few minutes and then definitely after the break too. But one of the interesting things, since we're going to be talking about the primaries, is a story I stumbled upon here about a startup company that is trying to replace Congress with software. Now, this is an interesting story for me as one who advocated replacing the state treasurer's office with software. I have mixed emotions on this, but honestly, I think it's a bad idea. Now, some will say, well, wait a second, you're replacing some government with a computer or with software, but not others. And yes, that is correct. The Office of Treasurer is an administrative office. It has a job to do. Its job, as outlined by our Constitution, is to write checks. Checks that have already been authorized by the General Assembly, and the governor's office says, write those checks. The treasurer says, okay, and writes those checks. Actually, they put it in a computer and they hit print, and it prints all those checks. And then it gets mailed out. And they do some reporting, right? They do reports on how much money's in the bank account, or bank accounts, as is the case. And they also have the Office of Lost Property Management, which is the most annoying office in the state to get your money back from. Boy, is that annoying. I have like 60 or 70 bucks locked up over there, and it's really not worth the hassle. really have to send like 3 forms of ID to show up in Frankfurt. For $70, it'll cost me more in gas. So the reason that I support replacing that office, the Office of Treasurer, with software is because it doesn't have to think. There's no check and balance in that office. The office has no power. It is a doer. It is, in the old sense of the word, the magistrate. The magistrate is the doer. They are the person who, after an assembly has said, we have decided this, magistrate, make it so. Their job is simply to make it so. And so replacing a make it so with a computer is easy. That's just making it so with a computer instead of a person. By contrast, elected officials actually have to think. Elected officials have a job to do. They have to vote. In theory, there are competing interests that a person needs, and an elected official needs to take into account. You've got the Constitution, which they're supposed to be worried about. You've got, what effect does this law have on America? What effect does this law have on my state? And what effect does this law have on my district? These are all things that a congressperson is supposed to think about before passing a law. And, of course, they have to rectify all of that with their own conscience as well. And so if you replace Congress with basically what it would be, an online democracy, I have a very sincere concern that the software that they are coming up with does not do those sorts of checks, that it's just simply a people say, yep, I want this, yes, or nope, I don't want that, no. And it just tallies it up, and whoever has the majority gets the vote. The problem there is that you're not accounting for the Constitution or localities, although they may have built for localities. They don't really say. I have a real concern about going to a pure democracy. Democracy is actually dangerous. That's why we don't have a democracy. Our founders recognized that a 50% plus one majority could absolutely rule with a tyrant's fist over 50% minus one. And that's why we are supposed to have checks and balances. That's why we're supposed to have these multiple layers and multiple things to consider. Certainly, it would have been much easier to just create one government over the whole shebang, to not have cities and counties and states. Certainly, it would have been easier. Hard on purpose. It was there in order to protect us from the government, protect us from the 50% plus one. And so I have grave concerns about replacing Congress with software. I did make a joke about this earlier that, maybe, though, if the software does have built into it the constitutionality check, we might be better off. But, you know, the point is that we need to be very, very careful about this. And I haven't looked into this fully. I'm definitely going to look into it further. But this just came across today that I saw, and it made me a little worried. One more quick thing, and then we'll take an early break, and we'll take calls. Again, that number is 858-683-1326 if you want to chime in. We're going to talk about all the primaries, the results, and what it all means. But one of the things that's been interesting now is the primary. The push is on from the Democrats and Republicans to rally around the flag. We all need to unify. Unity, 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 yay! And the Democrats had their unity rally up here yesterday, Friday? I can't remember now. And the Republicans are doing their unity rally thing. And obviously there's a lot of people who are very unhappy with the choices that their party has made. And in many cases, the choices were very stark differentiations from between candidates, and so as a result, There's a lot of people who are just not on board with the plan of who won. And as a result, there's a lot of people who are on board with that plan that are now trying to guilt trip, pressure, scare in any which way, shape, or form, push people back into the ranks. And one of the ways that is often done is Perot factor. People say, well, you know, not getting on board, oh boy, you know, that. Remember Perot, he split the votes and and that's not what happened at all with Perot. And so I like to bring that up. Anytime somebody brings it up, I'm like, hey, thank you for bringing up Perot, because the reality is he didn't change anything as far as the outcomes. But what he did successfully do in running twice for president was change the tone, to change the conversation in D.C., to force the federal government to actually get things like balancing the budget. Crazy, right? Woo, crazy, balancing the budget. Now, the way Congress did it was kind of asinine in that though all the money from the Social Security fund and bankrupted Social Security, and that's not what Ross Perot meant, just for the record, but they did at least, because he ran twice and he lost twice and he did worse the second time, which did not surprise me. That's how that works. Math is out there to show that he did not swing anything. That, in fact, what he did was brought a whole other class of voter out to the polls. A ridiculous number of people came out that would not have otherwise come out. 10 million people, roughly. Of how many votes did he get? 13 million? 10 million of those were people who would not have otherwise voted in the race. That's significant, folks. Three quarters of the people who came out to vote for Perot would not have otherwise voted. These are people who finally had a voice, kind of a squeaky one and kind of short and kind of awkward, but a voice for what they believed. And by running not just once, but twice, he was able to change the conversation, because that issue was not going to go away. He was not going to give up that cause, and other people would have taken up that cause had Congress not acted to balance the budget, because that was one of the big things he pushed. One of the other big things he pushed, NAFTA reform. Guess what else happened in the late 90s? NAFTA reform. The point is that just because a candidate cannot win, as they say, doesn't mean that that candidate cannot have a significant effect on the outcome of policy, public policy. And in fact, if you look back through time, the purpose of most third-party and independent runs, because most are unsuccessful because of the way the system is built now, not originally, but the way it's built now, makes it very, very difficult for anyone but a D or an R to win. Things like here in Kentucky, the straight party ticket vote, where parties just have to convince you, you need to vote Democrat because Republicans are evil. You need to vote Republican because Democrats are evil. And that's what the parties will be putting out, make no mistake, on the general election. Because we have that mechanism of zero thought voting, it hurts the ability of any legitimate challenge to the old parties. They get people all whooped up into a frenzy over, oh my gosh, those people are evil. We got to stop the evil people. Oh my golly, they're trying to kill babies. And the others, oh my God, they're trying to kill women. And oh my God, you know, it's just ridiculous. Nobody's trying to kill babies and nobody's trying to kill women. Let me just put that out there. But they get everybody whooped up into a frenzy over it. And the funny thing is when they're in control, they do nothing to actually solve said problems that they claim are a problem. But they whip everybody up into a frenzy, emotional frenzy, and get them out to vote. And today, our voters are people who are basically scared into voting against someone. And that's the problem with our system. It doesn't matter who wins the primary. I asked this question to someone earlier today. If Hitler made it through the primaries as a Republican, have you drunk so much of the Republican Kool-Aid that you would be telling people to vote for Hitler because we need to rally around the Republicans? Use your brain. Please, think about who you're planning on voting for. And if they don't deserve your vote, then don't give them your vote. If they don't earn your vote, then don't give them your vote. Votes should be earned, not scared out of you like some bully. It's like the old when the mafia and the mob and them used to run cities. Oh, you need to give us your protection money. Everything will be all right. That's the system we're in now. It's all protection money and turf. It's ridiculous. We got to stop. The only way it stops is if people have the courage to stand up and say no more. My vote has to be earned, not scared out of me, not shaken down out of me. I must be convinced. Which gets into a whole other laundry list of issues for independents and third parties who get no media coverage. But I promised we'd take an early break because I want to talk about the primary and the results. We have a lot to talk about, a lot of good stuff. Again, if you want to call in, now's the time. Area code 858-683-1326, 858-683-1326. We'll be back here in just a few minutes. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Try to forget all this mess I'm in. I can stand it. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. And if you'd like to call in, we take calls during the second half. Again, 858-683-1326, and that is area code 85683-1326. So during this time, we'd like to bring co-host Dave onto the show, and I'm going to bring him on now. There you are. Dave, you're on the air, brother. What are your thoughts? Dave, are you there?
Sorry about that. I was trying to get unmuted here. You know, you're talking about when cities used to be run by the mob. I believe that there are still quite a few cities that are run by the mob.
Well,
I don't think we've
changed much. You know, it's funny. Well, it is funny you say that. I mean, there's a lot of cities. Chicago is probably the most blatant example of cities controlled by some powers behind the scenes. But even here in Kentucky, every county, every city has some sort of establishment behind it. And it may not be as nefarious as the mob or the mafia were, but maybe they are. They're just not as ruthless, maybe. The problem is that people get set in their ways. People say, oh, well, that person's a nice person. I'm going to vote for them. People are voting for the wrong reasons, which is unfortunate. They're not voting for, hey, this person has a plan and they'll make things better. It's, well, you know, I did business with this guy's uncle's third cousin, and boy, you know, they did me right, so I'm going to vote for that person, even though they may be advocating a completely insane platform or no platform at all.
That's all I saw in leading up to the primary was, you know, you don't want to vote for my opponent because, so it was just all scare tactics, and that was it. And in every single case, it was, you know, somebody bringing the power or perceived power, you know, of some organization, you know, against their opponent. It's just, I get so bogged down in negativity every day from so many different places. You know, what everybody is looking for, including me, you know, is the positive. You know, we've got enough negativity in our lives. We don't need to hear any more. You know, we need to hear solutions. We need to hear where people are going. You know, let's hear some vision, you know, where, you know, what you want to do. Don't tell us what the other guy, what we don't want the other guy to do, or gal. Tell us what you're going to do. That's what we all want to hear.
Well, I'll tell you, that's what I've been preaching, golly, for a year, 2 years. I mean, who isn't sick of negative campaigning? Please raise your hand. I don't see any hands. Of course, there's nobody in front of me, but I'm sure there's no hands raised anywhere right now that says, boy, I just love that negative campaigning. Woo-wee, that's great. We've got so many problems at every level, city, county, state, federal, and nobody's talking about solutions. Everybody's being corralled by fear and, you know, being corralled by fear is what keeps you exactly where you're at. There is no change if you're afraid to make that change. And it amazes me because a lot of these changes are things that people actually want. They actually want these things, but they're afraid for them to happen. And it's almost counterintuitive. I can't quite put my finger on why people go, yeah, I really like that, but boy, I don't know. Oh, boy, Boy, that's, I don't know. I better just go with what I know. Even though what you know is horrible and you know it.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem that we have with negative campaigning is that it still works. It really is. It's our fault. I'm going to throw myself under the bus here, with everybody else, because it's our fault. If it didn't work, it wouldn't be done. And the problem with it is it's extremely effective. So, my challenge to all of our listeners is be strong in yourself and your own beliefs. Don't let negative campaigning work anymore. Stop listening to the fear-mongering. Stop being afraid.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's – until people – and fear is a very powerful motive. It's our motivator. It's one of our base instincts. Oh, my gosh, I'm fearful. I need to do something. I need to run away from something. And I get why it works, but you're exactly correct. And until we as a people and as individuals are willing to run away from fear as a motivator and instead say, well, wait a second, you're just trying to snowball me, right? It's kind of like the first time, and everybody's had this happen to them, right? The first time somebody does the trick with the hand, look over here and they flick your nose or they slap your face or whatever, right? You learn after one or two times what's going on, and you stop falling into the same trap. And it's really high time that we as voters pay enough attention to know at least to not fall back into that trap.
Yeah, and, anybody that's running for anything, too, listen up. We're all tired of it. Everybody's tired of it. We need to move forward. Positive change can and should happen, although you wanted to talk about the results of the primary. I do have to admit that my faith in humanity has been vigorously shaken by the results of the primary.
Yeah, folks, for those of you that missed last week's show, Dave and I and our guest, Paul from Stop Invisible Taxes, we all kind of took a wager on where we thought the race was going to turn out between Bevin and McConnell. And Paul was the least optimistic in that he thought there'd be a 30-point margin. I had said a 20-point margin, and that was not that I wanted it to be. It was just, just because I've been watching the polls and all that. And Dave was very hopeful in that more people would be awake, more people would look for change, and though he would not win, Bevin would be only lose by 8 points. And, now almost a week later, what we know is that the race was actually about a 25-point race, and it was very disheartening to see that happen. I actually did not see – I should have probably checked the final results, but it was not what I wanted. We did not want – a blowout, because what that means is that the same old fear tactics work. We're not – obviously we're not sick of what's going on, because we decided to put it right back, and very disturbing. On the Democratic side, Grimes was the only one who ever got traction, so it was not really a huge surprise that she won. But I do believe that there was about 20% that didn't go for her either. And so, at least – 20% of the Democratic side, despite not being or not really having any other choices, who ran viable campaigns. And by viable, understand, they may run their hearts out. I don't know these folks. They may have run their hearts out, but the media never paid attention to them. Their own party ignored them and was already fundraising for Ms. Grimes and was rah-rahing Ms. Grimes. And, in fact, that caused one of the candidates that was on the Democratic side early on to back out and is now trying to run as a independent, which is Ed Marksberry, who been told is going to be on one of our sister shows here on the network, the Ed Springsteen show, sometime in the near future. And when that happens, I will be sure to let all of you know, because I'm very interested to hear how he's doing and what he's doing. And, of course, on our side, we have David Patterson, the Libertarian Party candidate as well, on my side of things. you know, it just disheartens me. It makes me sad to see that the majority of people on the Democratic and Republican sides are still willing to be corralled, still willing to, you know, rally around things that don't to their benefit. And I guess that's just the way it's going to be for now until things get even worse. Yes, I guess we're just going to have to wait until they get worse.
I think that people have been waking up. I'm always the optimist. I always see the silver lining in every dark cloud, and it's just not happening as quickly as I would like. It's happening. It's, you know, we're moving in a positive forward direction. We're just not there yet. I'm getting a little bit more pessimistic in the sense that I'm not so sure that I'm going to see it in my lifetime. But people are waking up. I'm a little shocked. I was a little shocked at the results of the primary that we're not as far along as I thought we were.
I mean, I'm looking at the results here since I didn't have them quickly in front of me. It was almost 25 points separated Bevin and McConnell. It was just under 24.5-ish. Grimes did get 76.5%, so at least there were 23.5% willing to vote against her. It's nothing personal against any of these folks. I mean, it's just amazing how the party machinery, the machine can convince people to do things the way that they do. That's all. It surprises me, you know.
Real quick. I guess one good thing about the results are that we definitely need to have it, and I almost hesitate to say this because it almost seems like, you know, some fear-mongering what I'm saying right now. I assure you it's not. But if you take a look at the results of your local elections, you will find some very eyebrow-raising items. And so it is definitely the responsibility of the electorate right now, of the voting public, to educate the heck out of yourself about all of these offices and how they affect you. Because you may find that offices that affect you very personally, very close to home, have candidates that you might not be so comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, really the answer there is, you know, the primary is already done. So you can't change the results there. And so going into the general election, you're going to have to know two things. One, you're going to have to know who you can vote for. And as you mentioned earlier, Ken, you know, don't vote for anyone that hasn't earned your vote. So when you walk into that voting booth, you're going to need to know who you can reasonably vote for. Vote for, not against. Vote for. The other thing that you're going to need to know is those races where you don't have anybody that you can vote for, you're going to have to know exactly how that office affects your life. So understand that. Educate yourself between now and then so that when the general election happens and you've got these people coming in, some of whom you can't do anything about, you know how to deal with it. Campbell County, the position of constable just became extremely important.
And I'll tell you, you know, all it's very interesting. All of these positions play a role. And, you know, a lot of people get caught up on just the federal races. You know, I was involved. I had a few friends running as D's and R's, and you know, behind the scenes, I helped them do some math and some real basic stuff. And the interesting thing to me you know, going back over those elections and looking at those and others and comparing outcomes and whatnot, what's amazing to me, what's interesting to me, and I guess it is in a way telling that a lot of people who don't know what they're voting for don't, which is good, but it's sad that, you know, there are, as you go down the tree of offices, fewer and fewer votes because fewer and fewer people know what's going on at that level. And I do think it's important for us as voters to at least examine those races. Now, maybe they did. I don't think everybody did, but maybe a good portion did. Maybe a good portion went through and said, you know what, I like what this person has to say. I don't like what this person has to say. I don't know. Maybe. But the point you're making is that, and I agree, is that all of these offices that are elected are important in some way. Otherwise, they wouldn't be elected. Our founders, under our fourth constitution, passed in the late 1800s, there's a reason that these offices are elected. It's because they do wield some power or served some purpose. I mentioned earlier the treasurer's office that doesn't do a heck of a lot, but at the time, they were important because someone had to write all the checks. They had actually talked about eliminating the treasurer's position then, but they decided too darn hard to get somebody, and they didn't want to just give it to the governor and be able to have different sets of books. They didn't want to give it just to the General Assembly. So the treasurer still exists, and technology can overcome that. But, you know, things even as simple as your county clerk. Yeah.
We've got a question from the chat room here. Harley Ryder wants to know the percentages, the turnout, the voter turnout.
The turnout. Oh, you have to ask me that. Let's see. Voter turnout statewide was 27.07% of, well, that's of registered voters. And so I can tell you that almost 10% additional were ineligible to vote because they are not D's or R's. So that math isn't exactly correct there. When they say 3.1 million voters are registered and that there were 840,000 votes cast, that math doesn't exactly work out because, you know, there's a good 300 and some thousand people that are registered as something else who were ineligible to vote, or maybe it's a quarter of a million. The point is that math's not quite right, but still, you know, another 60% of the electorate could have turned out and could have changed things. It's rather unfortunate, especially since the taxpayers fund these primaries. And I don't want to get down that rat hole, but daggone it, I have to pay for this and y'all aren't using it. I can't use it, you know, but I'm helping pay for it. Dave, I know you're registered as a non-DR and you're helping to pay for it. Daggone it, you know, at least use it if you can. Pay enough attention for that. You know, there'll be about a 70% turnout in the general election, so it'll be more than double the turnout in this primary. And, you know, in a lot of races, especially here in Northern Kentucky, but even in Louisville and Lexington and elsewhere, the primaries decided the race. And, you know, you're not going to get a voice in those now because you didn't go. And in some cases, some counties, unfortunately, are one-party dominated. And maybe you didn't want to vote for any of those, or maybe you're registered in the wrong party. And that's really unfortunate, too. I do think that having more choices on election day is a good thing. But, yeah, 27% of eligible voters. And actually, that's pretty high, by the way, for a primary. 27% of registered voters turned out and voted in the primary. 840,586 ballots were cast. And, I don't know. I mean, again, unless people are willing to, you know, get up off their butts and go do something about things, you know, and at the same time, and it's frustrating, I saw at least one race where the winner won, and this is not the Senate race I'm talking of, but at least one race where basically the challenger beat an incumbent by just lying their rear end off, guiltily, but lying. And it's really, really unfortunate to see that people weren't more awake to know that those were lies. And in part, that's because the other campaign didn't successfully get that out there, and that's their own fault. But, you know, I really worry that as things get worse, as people get angrier, we're going to see more and more of the lie smear campaigns, and it is going to be important for us as voters to be able to cut through the BS and know the truth and learn the truth and have the information out there. But, man, the media is dead. I mean, the media was complicit in some of this stuff, and it's just unfortunate because if the media is not going to work as a check and balance on government, well, you know, we're going to have to come up with our own means of getting information out.
Yeah, I think that more and more people, though, are turning off and tuning in. What I mean by that is, you know, there are more and more outlets, you know, for people to use. For example, our listeners. You know, our listeners are definitely, you know, getting their information from very well-rounded sources. You know, they're not just listening to the mainstream media. And, you know me, I'm a little more optimistic. I have a little more faith. I don't think that the media is dead. I think that the media has changed. I think the mainstream media and the media are two different terms right now. And more and more people are turning to smaller sources, if you will. You know, they're turning to the little guy or gal, and they're listening to what they have to say, you know, rather than that kind of, you know, big media conglomerate message, you know, that's attempting to be forced down their throat. But they're just turning off. They're turning the channel. You know, they're going somewhere else. They're getting stuff from, you know, streaming. You know, they're getting, their information from YouTube and social media, Twitter, Facebook, you know, all of that stuff. And while there is an amazing amount of junk, you know, out there, there's also a lot of really good stuff. And if you can filter through, you know, and find it, you're better off.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I mean, there are new news sources coming out, which I'm really, really pleased about. Up here in Northern Kentucky, we've got one that's online only. It's great. And you know what? I'm just going to plug them, River City News. Michael Monks, the editor of that paper, does a really good job at just trying to tell people what's going on in Northern Kentucky. And I really appreciate that he is not engaging in editorials and I know his political leanings, and even in stories where he's, you know, apt to come down one way or the other, he just throws out the information and says, what do you folks think? And I love it. I mean, that's the new media, and I think that is going to see what we're going to see is that the old established media that has ties and has financial pressures to lean one way or another, and make no mistake, there are serious financial pressures in the old media, that the new media is going to have new sources that cut through the clutter and bring you what's really going on in your community. And the sooner that happens, not just in Northern Kentucky, but across the state and across the country, I think the better off we'll all be as consumers of information.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think people are more apt to, you know, turn to people that they know. You know, I think people are getting more directly connected with the news that they're ingesting, you know, than ever before. You know, they're getting news from private, local sources. They're turning to their friends for what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, we're in the middle of such a cool time, you know, right now where, you know, something that's happening on your block, you know, that you may not have heard about, you know, 10 years ago for a week, you know, until it was published in, you know, the newspaper or, you know, you saw a news story about it. You know, you're seeing pictures about, you know, happen in real time, video happen in real time.
Yeah. I mean,
I think that's
and that's
cool.
Exactly. I do too. As long as we can cut through the clutter. I mean, at the same time, and I was going to bring this up and we're running out of time, there is a deliberate effort to miseducate people on the internet going on right now. And it is disturbing, easily debunked, things that are easily proven to be outright lies are being pushed in the form of Facebook memes and tweets and everything else to try to push people politically one way or the other. And it's extremely disturbing to me that people fall so quickly into what in the science community is confirmation bias, that, oh, well, I want to believe this, so I'm going to believe this, and I'm going to spread it. We need to be very careful about that stuff, because if you're not keeping track of who it is that's pushing that particular information and don't know what their political agenda is or other ulterior motive, you could be pushing complete garbage around. And man, there's a ton of it, just a ton of it on Facebook these days. It's driving me nuts. Things that take 3 seconds to debunk. I mean, it takes longer to type the Google search in than it does to find the information to debunk it. Oh my gosh, that's the one thing we really have to be careful of in this new digital information era, is that you need to know where you're getting your information from.
I agree, and you should definitely take a look and try to clarify, you know, any information that you're looking at. And there is a ton out there that is easily debunked. But I'll tell you, the thing that I see that bugs me is the extreme amount of people that are attempting to debunk valid information that is easily proven. They're out there saying, you have absolutely nothing to put this on, you know, and they just flame and flame and flame based on nothing. They try to debunk it by saying there's no truth to it. You know, and they're not trying to prove or disprove anything in any real way. You know, there's no substance, you know, to their claims. And people jumping on that bandwagon, there's good information that's easily proven. Somebody gets in there and starts flaming how it's not true and it can't be proven, and everybody believes the person that's saying that it can't be proven, just because they're saying that it can't be proven.
Yeah, well, and I'm going to have to make that your final thought, because we only have a few seconds left in the show, and I've got to wrap up here. I've got something else I have to do right after the show. But that is important, right? I just saw a great example of this misinformation campaign and people denying what is obviously easy to be proven in a political campaign up here. And I won't talk about the issue or the specifics, but it's a matter of public record that candidate A did action X, but candidate A was just put it out there, nuh-uh, and people went, oh, okay. I mean, it's a matter of public record. Folks, we have to be more savvy about what we're doing and more savvy about how we're voting and where we're getting our information from. We're out of time. Folks, thanks for tuning in. Dave, thanks for being here. Tune into the show next week. Also, tune into the other shows Monday through Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the My View Matters Radio Network. Until next time, have a good week.